When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hey y'all, my voice is shaky only because I'm excited. I'm also really excited because before we sat down, my sound engineer Nick told me, hey, you know, I'm glad there's no camera in front of me because I might be beet red when you're talking about this topic. So the topic today is BDSM and talking about all things relationships and, you know, all of our favorite topics here on Tigress. As all of you know, for the last few episodes, I've been exploring a lot of curiosities that I've had around pleasure and polyamory and just like sex in general. I think one of the things that I feel like I'm still grappling with is the feeling of guilt after I pleasure myself. And I think that's something that's so rooted in patriarchy and a lot of shit that I grew up with and like a lot of trauma. And I found it super healing to have these conversations. And as y'all know, Tigress is the unhinged, unapologetic, pretty unedited podcast where we talk about all the things that might be deemed uncomfortable otherwise. So today I'm joined by a very, very special friend of mine, but also someone who is a dom herself, Kim, who is the founder of Omsom, which is very spicy, like literally like tasteful spices, which you can talk more about, but also is a dom herself. So Kim, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. What a great little introduction you just gave to me.
So I'll let you introduce yourself more because I feel like I know you're a dom, right? But like when you introduce yourself, you're like, okay, professionally, your job is your company. Yes. And would love for you to say a little bit about that. But then also like, what is that other side of you that you're also very public about?
Yeah. Okay. So actually, if I can kind of derail this for a little bit,
yes.
My goal for 2021 was actually integration. And what I mean by that is actually tying together my professional personal life. Because I think oftentimes people phrase and pose it like, oh, this is who I am in my vanilla life. And this is who I am in my kinky life. And I think that compartmentalization is actually bolstered by the patriarchy. So part of my work is showing up as all of me all the time. So
love.
I am Kim Pham, the co-founder of Omsom, a proud and loud Asian food brand all about reclaiming and celebrating Asian flavors and stories. And I am Kim Pham, also known as Mommy, a trained dominatrix of 5 years now.
Wow.
And I actually see those two parts of me as super complementary. They feed one another. And they all kind of fall under this umbrella of like, how do I be unapologetically myself as a queer woman of color?
Let's unpack some of the terms that you just used. So I feel like when people hear BDSM, probably the majority, at least of my peers, immediately think of 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh my God.
Like that's the only education that they have of it.
Right.
Or, and then the word dominatrix too, I feel like is, there's a lot of misinformation about it. So
totally.
What is a dominatrix? What does that mean to you?
Yeah. So I think like there's a couple things we have to define here. So kink, I think, is the larger umbrella under which kind of non-normative types of play fall under. So that can include fetishes, that can include BDSM, which for me is ultimately about consensual, ethical power exchange. So within BDSM, which I believe is like bondage, DS, dominant, submissive, masochism, I very much enjoy the DS play, which is dominant / submissive. And for me, my journey into recognizing my female dominance is intimately tied to my own journey as a founder, where I think for so long I have internalized a lot of the messages that Asian women in particular are given through porn, through media, through movies, which is your femininity, your sexuality is to be harvested and reaped by others.
Mm.
And when you look at actually history, that is absolutely bolstered through kind of the colonialism and imperialism that Western forces have held over many Asian countries. And for a lot of folks, kind of post-opium wars, for a lot of Western communities, their first engagement with Asian women in particular, or Asian women's bodies, was through the sex trade post-opium wars and the war, kind of the world kind of opening up. And so that has absolutely kind of continued throughout the years up until, you know, little Kim starting, you know, to start having sex. And, you know, I love my parents. They're super sex positive in many ways, but they weren't super kind of educated about this sort of stuff. So when I started playing, I kind of just internalized the messages that, like, oh, I think I'm supposed to be submissive, or at least like quiet, or I think I'm straight. And so therefore I have to let like men kind of treat me this way and bend me this way. And I have to look and sound this way during play. And it wasn't until like starting Omsom, which, as you know, starting a business like fucks your whole life up. Yeah. I kind of decided to really examine that and realize like, I'm actually, I think I'm a super, 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 super dom leaning switch. And so as I started to kind of like unlearn and begin this journey into becoming a dom, I realized, man, I've slept with a lot of shitty doms in my life. And so I owe it to myself and to my partners to not be a shitty dom. So what did that mean? I wanted to go like take classes. I wanted to train from pro doms. I wanted to really just like truly understand what it's like to be an ethical dom. Because I think that word dom is thrown around a lot. I think a lot of cishet men are like, oh, I'm a dom. I smack women and choke them. Ugh. 50 Shades,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that is a very specific sort of domination that is not all domination. I think my like goal right now is to show people that there are multitudes that can exist within play. It doesn't have to just look one way. And for me, BDSM is just like the most fun playground to be able to honestly like understand yourself, begin to connect and heal, frankly, with others through ethical consensual power exchange.
One of the questions that I had for you is like, when does, I mean, I sort of consider sex, any form of sex, some sort of power exchange of like someone was initiating it, even if it's it changes throughout that, you know, sexual interaction, like someone's leading it, someone's not. When does sex or like that practice become BDSM? Where is it measured by like an extreme imbalance of power? Is it measured by the fact that it's a fictitious difference of power that you're playing into? How, when does like, you know, I think fun dom sub sex become, this is an intentional practice of BDSM?
Yes. So I would push back on you. And I actually don't think all sex is power exchange. I think some sex can just be play. Like one of my kind of like mistresses once taught me, she was like, Kim, all sex is like, well, all kink is childhood play with adult sexual privilege. She was like, we used to, when we were children, like I'd be like, I'd meet you in the playground. I'd be like, Nadia, I'm a cop. You're a robber. Go. And we would create these little worlds that we wouldn't even think twice about. And she was like, over time, as we become adults, we pack on insecurity, ego, trauma, pain. And so by the time we show up as adults and then we try and play, we have like all the stuff that's blocking us. She's like, all kink is like that same sort of like childhood play, but now with like orgasms and wacky pokey proddy things. And I really love that view of play because then it allows me to view that it's not always about power exchange. For me, BDSM is a very particular practice. What I mean by that is that if I am to engage in BDSM, there's negotiation, there's which is like a very formal practice.
Like an intense conversation. Okay.
I'm happy to talk about it. It's like a whole thing. So there's negotiation, then there's the scene, and then there's aftercare. It's something that's intentional all the way through. You know exactly what you're doing. It's really clear who does what. It's of a defined thing. And I think there are a lot of folks who are new to BDSM who are like, oh, I do BDSM by like tying down my partner, and that's what that is. And I'm like, that can be, but for me, I'm really intent on teaching folks like BDSM is a practice and there's an art to the practice.
So in your journey, you started Omsom how many years ago?
Like we launched in 2020, but I've been working it since 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you've been a dom for longer, like went to dom school before that.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was basically, long story short, I got out of a really wonderful, but really vanilla relationship of 3 years. Wonderful human being. I have no bad things to say about that person. But I think I got out of that and was like, holy shit, I don't know who I am. Because sometimes you get in relationships that like consume you. And I literally remember sitting in my moleskin and writing, okay, let's write down everything that I think I know about myself and determine literally line by line whether or not that's truly mine and whether it was like inherited or given to me by society. So as part of that, I was like, I'm straight. Uh-oh. I actually don't think I am. Okay, I think I'm queer. Okay. I'm submissive. And I was like, I don't know. And like literally through that process led me to like becoming a dom, starting Omsom, like learning and recognizing my queerness. Like all of that happened at the same time. And that's no surprise to me. That's no coincidence.
So what is dom school?
So it's not really like a dom school. There are like specific programs. But I actually trained at a house in Brooklyn where it's a pro dom like house where they take sessions, but they train apprentices. Mm. So I did a little apprenticeship, kind of learned a lot of things, took a ton of classes, did like a couple weekend intensives. And through that process realized, oh my God, everything that I thought I knew about BDSM is so wrong.
Yeah.
Because like the majority of the work, the hard work for me was less about like, here's how to use a strap on.
Yeah.
It was less about the wacky pokey prodding things. The first, I would say like half of my becoming a dom was really understanding my feminine power, understanding the persona that I become when I am in dom space, aftercare, negotiation, like all of that stuff was way more important to me than like, here's how you do cock and ball torture, which I love by the way, but it's not like the main thing that I like wanted to get from that experience.
Like super intentional and
yeah.
I think one of the things that was really eye-opening for me when we first talked was I always kind of associated the word like dominatrix as honestly like a profession, right? Yeah. Like you are paid by clients to play this role with them. But I remember talking to you for the first time and you were like, oh, but I'm also a lifestyle dom. And you were telling me all the ways that it fed into your relationship life, but also your relationships, your work life. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. Like, how is you being a dominatrix or mommy now? Mm-hmm. How is that manifesting in a professional setting, like being paid for that like value that you give versus like, where does this show up in your everyday life?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, the term dom for me is something that I feel deeply in my bones that it can absolutely be a profession. And I want to clarify really quickly. I'm not a sex worker. I have deep and immense respect for sex workers. Always listen to sex workers first and foremost, particularly queer people of color who do incredible, incredible sex work. They are the only reason I'm here today.
Yeah.
But for me, I think I wanted to access my feminine power, yes, for play and for sex and for orgasms. Yes, yes, yes. Always, right?
Yeah.
But for me, I actually think it was like a fundamental rewiring of really shitty things that I've internalized my whole life as an Asian woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best thing that DS has given me and my training and my work now still with submissives and pets is it's just like this immense empathy. Because that is the heart of domination. People think domination is about control and taking, and it is on the surface, right? But what it's really at the most crux, like the heart of it all, is like intense curiosity, listening, empathy. Because what I do with a submissive is not like, you're going to do exactly what I want today. That's what I may sound like.
Yeah.
What I'm actually doing through negotiation and through kind of all that, even pre-negotiation, is building an intimate relationship, trying to build understanding, trying to see them fully and understand like, okay, what does submission to them look like? Because no, DS is not the same for everyone, right?
Yeah.
Like some folks, submission could be super physical. Like I have pets who are like 6'4" firefighters who are like veterans. And they're like, you know, I've always been an alpha in my life in a big, tall man, buff, etc. And so for them, submission is like, I really want to be physically restrained. I want to feel small. And then for other folks, submission is a total mental thing. It's like, hey, actually like I don't really want to be hurt. I don't really want to be restrained. I don't really care too much for the physical. For me, I actually want to be, let's just say, like used as a service sub. Like I want to do your dishes or do your laundry, and I want to care in a way that I felt like I haven't had access to. So once I realized there's no one size fits all, it became this really rewarding human connection thing. And that is what I love about being a dom is like, yes, the monkey pokey probably thinks is fun. But I just get to like meet humans and see them fully and create space, particularly for folks who may not be able to access softness or weakness in their day-to-day lives, that I get to create the space for that.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save money on your insurance? Of course you would. After all, who wouldn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all of the things in your life, GEICO can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners, condo, or renters coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use GEICO mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to GEICO becomes an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save.
This show is part of the Pro Democracy Podcast Coalition. I think most of us agree that in a functioning democracy, the winner should be determined by the voters. Well, that almost didn't happen in 2020. Now extremists are working to intimidate and replace nonpartisan election workers with quote-unquote yes men who might reject election results. The only thing that will stop them is us. We've partnered with the grassroots pro-democracy organization, Represent Us, to give you the tools you need to protect free and fair elections. Learn more and get involved. Visit represent.us/pod to learn more.
Before we move on to my next question, because I have many, what is a pet?
So different DOMs have different honorifics. Yeah. So again, like one size fits all. So for my honorific, I used to be goddess when I first started my journey, but now I'm mom.
Is that like a name?
Yes, your honorific is like your title that you've earned. So I used to be goddess and now I'm mommy. It feels much better. And then your subs also have titles. So, you know, some folks like slave, for example. I personally think master and slave is like kind of gross in 2022. So I personally don't use that term. So I prefer like pets or pups, like or little boys, like little things that just want to take care of me.
I want a pet.
They're so cute.
Okay. And you've kind of been talking about like the different phases of this, right? The negotiation and then the aftercare. It actually reminds me of a lot of studying that I did a couple of years ago around transformative justice, where it also has this like really formal like process and phases. And it really is rooted in trying to create a rehabilitative, like healing space and a lot of like unlearning and learning. Oh, wow. And that's kind of what I was thinking about in the back of my head. But I'd love to hear a little bit more about, honestly, the negotiation part, because I think that one of the things that I've been really reflecting on in my own like upbringing and understanding sex and my body has been like the lack of teaching around consent, right? Whether it be like in school, we're not taught about consent. We're taught about being a good bystander. Like we're accepting that sexual assault is going to happen. And then, you know, you kind of get into playing, having sex. Like when I was 16 and I remember just being like, do I ask? Do they ask? Yeah. Oh, they're not asking. But I guess I'm moving and I'm not saying no, you know. So I'm curious, I'm really excited to honestly hear about the negotiation part, because to me, I'm like, oh, this seems like such a formal way of asking consent. Right.
It is like at its most kind of like core definition, it is. But I think when you see like truly experienced DOMs do it, it's like magic. It like flows like water. So negotiation is basically where you negotiate what's about to happen in the scene, right? And scenes, for the most part, unless you're in like a lifestyle sort of engagement, there's a start and a stop and an end, and then there's aftercare. So for me, negotiation is like the most fun part. I'm an extrovert. I'm also a triple water sign and a Cancer, so I love like hearing humans. But for me, negotiation, I think, is the most fun, because very rarely are you like, what do you want me to do to you, Nadia? Because if you were even asked me that, I'd be like, you know, that's so intense. So what I enjoy is kind of like the emotional, kind of like fluffy, fun, sexy part. So oftentimes it's just like, I want to hear, you know, about previous experiences with BDSM that have been like enjoyable for you. What do you definitely not like? What have you seen on porn recently that's kind of caught your eye?
Yeah.
Like if it's a Tuesday night and it's 11 p.m., you crawl into bed, what are the top three searches that you're looking for? And it's this, it's like softer. It's just a little bit, it's just good questions, right? And through that, I'm able to find, quickly be able to understand like, okay, you know, I'm starting to get a feel that this person maybe feels a little bit shy, but they're interested in, you know, they actually enjoy being like restrained. There's something around bondage and lack of movement. Okay, like let me dig a little further. Then it's like, oh, is it the actual kind of physical restraint where you want to feel small and tight and little? Or is it more just like the mental, you know, aspect of knowing that you can't do anything? Like where is that joy rooted? Because for different people, it's different things. And through that negotiation, then I'm able to be like, okay, thank you so much for sharing. You know what? that's kind of, you know, it'd be kind of delicious for me is if the scene folded out this way. So maybe you start on your hands and knees in the living room, then we'll have you crawl into the bedroom. That would make you feel small, wouldn't it? And it's and it's like little things like that where you kind of just start to be able to flesh out the scene. Yeah. And it, while still retaining the power of I'm dominant and you're doing exactly what I want, but I've done the pre-work and hopefully you as a submissive have shown up as yourself wholly to kind of be able to co-create the scene together, even though I seem to be at power. And then through that negotiation, you literally run through the whole scene where you're like, this is what we're going to do. And it's not, you know, like A, B, C, but you're kind of walking through the scene and then maybe someone might push back and be like, hey, actually, I don't know. Like, I don't know if that would work with me. And then another very vital part of negotiation is literally like all the non-sexy stuff. So you're talking limits, you're talking injuries. Mm. Do you want marks? Okay, if you want marks, permanent or not, t-shirt or, you know, long sleeve, like where do you want those marks to show? What names are you okay with being called? What names are you not okay with being called?
Mm.
Are there any triggering situations that I should know about? Do you want to be degraded physically, verbally? Like then comes all the, I think, like tactical, really important, very explicit consent sort of stuff. But for me, I think it's like the combination of the like the soft scene creation as well as like the hard understanding of limits, boundaries, et cetera. And that for me is like a full 360 negotiation.
Yeah. And for you, is it also advocating for like what you in the dominant position want as well in terms of name calling and things like that?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I that's like kind of always, I think, discussed very early on for me.
Yeah.
I also discuss aftercare both for the dominant and the submissive because, again, everyone always thinks it's just the submissive who needs aftercare. I have super intense dom drop, especially after intense. I don't like to use that word because it's subjective, right? But like intense scenes that are especially like very physical for me, like I like to have aftercare as a dominant as we recenter in ourselves. So it's like all of that is part of negotiation.
And what are examples of aftercare? I'm thinking like cuddling, food.
Yeah, it could be anything. Yeah. Like, so it can be physical. So some folks like cuddle or shower together, dress each other. It could be quality time. So for me, it's really important that we go get a meal after and we talk as friends and as equals, even though we know like that's not really the situation.
Yeah.
It could just be acts of service. You know, some of my pets will just make sure my phone's charged or order me DoorDash, things like that. And it can be however, like whatever you need. Some folks need space and that's okay. Like put on some TV and I'll check in with you in 20 minutes. Like it could be, it's just the most radical communication of like, what are your needs? And that's what I love about BDSM.
Yeah. And you mentioned too that you are switch, right?
Yes.
So does that mean, you know, you're primarily more dom, but in some of those you're asking to be sub?
Yeah. So different folks have different definitions for switch. So for me, I rarely switch with the same partner.
Okay.
And I am very dominant leaning. I think that can change with partner and with time. Partners and with time, but I have not been submissive in years and I don't foresee that for a while. So people can be switches for life, but then literally go through periods where they're dom or sub or vanilla.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's literally just like recognizing you contain multitudes.
Yeah. Do you think at this point, like being dominant or even, you know, sexual in this way is like a part of the life phase you're in right now? Or is it like, this is a part of my identity. This is never going away.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. I think for me personally, it's, I just can't see my life being any other way. I feel like I woke up in many ways, like, you know, starting OMSOM and undergoing this journey. Do I think I'm always going to be like the top that I am now? No, maybe not. But I don't really care to like put an end date to it. You know, I'm gonna rock with it. And then when it doesn't feel authentic,
there's not an end part to the scene right now.
No end to the scene right now.
And if you don't mind me asking, obviously you can reject any question. How does this like, what does this look like in your relationship life right now? Right.
Yeah.
Like, is this all casual sex? Mm. Like, you know, intentional casual sex.
Yeah.
How are you meeting these people?
Yeah.
Or like, do you have, you know, long-term relationships and partners now?
Yeah. I think a big part of my journey has been even reconfiguring the idea of play. Cause I think growing up in heteronormative societies, like sex equals penetration. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think BDSM has blown open my understanding of play where most of my pets, I actually do not have penetrative sex with. Mm. Many of my pets, I'm not even naked. It's for me, it's truly a mental supplemented and complemented with physical. And so, for me, those are almost two separate questions of like, you know, Kim as mommy and then like Kim as having sex. Like they can be, it's a Venn diagram, right?
Yeah.
But things that are important to me now, I'm non-monogamous. So all partners that come into my life in a serious way, I think have to be kinky in some way. They don't have to be submissive. They don't even have to engage in BDSM. But I think non-normative play and understanding of that is just a deal breaker for me now.
Yeah.
I think it didn't used to be. And now that it is. And I really do enjoy like DS sessions with folks that are on a more casual level. Again, I'm not having penetrative sex with most of them. It's just literally like fun for me. I get to sharpen my skills. I get to hang out with humans that I adore and create a space for healing and joy for them. And then I have a handful of pets who have been with me for a long time in a non-sexual way at all, but they just enjoy serving me in different ways. And they're wonderful human beings that I adore. Like all these people, I don't play with any, again, I'm very lucky. This is such a privilege to say. I don't play with anyone where I don't have chemistry and connection. That is an absolute privilege to say as a dom. Yeah. But I'm just in that stage where of my life where I can kind of afford that.
Where does like romance and like the emotions behind this fall into it?
Yeah, it's hard. It's something I'm still understanding for myself because there are people that I meet in a dating capacity who the second I tell them I'm a dom, they immediately sexualize me and it stops them from understanding or seeing me in a full way. They're just like, because society has associated BDSM with like dirty and dark and not someone I can introduce to my mom type energy. And then there are people that I meet in a BDSM context who have, you know, totally fair enough, internalized shame around their submission that they could not imagine me in their vanilla life.
Yeah.
And so even though I'm integrated in my life, I find that it's been difficult for me to find kind of long-term primary partners that also are integrated in the same way. So I'm still kind of like wrangling it and understanding it myself. But I just do know that if I want a primary, they have to be kinky.
It's just, so you don't have a primary right
now? I do not have a primary right
now.
Got
it. Yeah. And is that something like you're open to or looking for? Is that something, you know, you're not interested in right now?
I'm open to it. I don't like to force anything.
Yeah.
You know, whatever rocks my way will come my way.
I just kind of imagine like for someone to be vulnerable with you and that trust and the intimacy, like how could they not fall in love with you or just like have that close connection to you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a lot of people who are perhaps infatuation with me because I have perhaps solved something for them that they've been seeking their whole life.
Or that you've unlocked some sort of desire that it's hard for them to find anywhere else.
Yeah, but very few of those folks see me like in partnership with them of like, we're going to build this empire together. They're kind of like, oh my God, I have never met a dominant woman who is down to do X, Y, Z. And I'm kind of like, cool. But like, there's so much more to me as well. I'm really glad that I can create that space for others, but that's not like the only part of me.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of interesting to navigate.
Well, and I know there's apps like Field, right?
Yes.
Is that primarily or like some like a tool, not a tool. I don't want to say a tool, but like a way that you're able to meet people and stuff.
Yeah. It's been mostly, I mean, obviously because of the pandemic, less IRL, but Field is my favorite.
Yeah.
FetLife is also great, although like super web 1.0, but like if you're kinky, you're on FetLife in some way. And I've met some really incredible humans there.
Yeah.
And then also like part of me, part of this integration work is I show up as myself in every space. Parties, on Instagram, my parents know I'm like this.
Yeah.
And so if you're down to ride with that and you fuck with that and we meet IRL, like that's cool too.
Yeah.
I don't have to just meet you through an app.
What was your parents' reaction?
I've never explicitly like sat down and had a conversation like, hi, mom and dad, I'm a dom. But they follow me on Instagram. They like all my stuff. I think all they ever want for me is to be my true self. They've always advocated for my individuality since day one. And they're also kind of weirdos in their own way.
Yeah.
And so I think they're really proud that I'm truly firmly in my skin. Do they want to know all the stuff that I do? No.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not enjoyable for them as Vietnamese refugees. But I think they are proud to see me like own it in like a full and real way.
I just find like, I mean, it'd be fascinating to like do content with you and your parents because it just feels so radical for them, especially as Vietnamese refugees, to be so accepting. Like it's beautiful, right? Like, I mean, I was disowned by my grandparents, my maternal grandparents several months ago. And a lot of it was like the cultural dissonance of like, what does it mean if you're pansexual?
Mm.
What are you sharing with the world? Why are you posting that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you choose to do with a degree. So I just find it, it's really refreshing and like beautiful that you have parents who like are your, even your internet fans as a public dom, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like I'll take anything, right? Yeah. And
do they talk about their sex life to you?
No.
And no.
I'm kind of okay with that right now. But I grew up in like a strangely sex positive household in the sense that like my parents own their sexuality, like they're hot, which was like a weird thing.
Yeah.
Which now I view as like kind of radical. Like my father's literal phone screensaver is his six pack abs. It's literally like,
oh, his own.
His own. It's like a headless torso, like classic Tinder like profile of his six pack. And I remember being mortified.
So they're hot as like they're objectively hot.
They feel attractive and they own their attractiveness.
Mm.
And I used to be so embarrassed by that. Like my mom has double D implants and always dressed like hot. And I remember just being mortified. And now I look back and I'm like, as Vietnamese refugees who came here in the 70s, as Asian people, Southeast Asian people, for them to feel sexy in their own skin is fucking radical. And I can learn so much from that. And once I like unlocked that learning, I'm like, yeah, I will look like that. I literally wore this to work today. I wear this to investor meetings. Like my investors who follow me on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, they see my stuff. Like, but if you ruck with Omsom's proud and loud view of Asian Americana, then you have to understand that it comes from this.
I mean, you're the creative visionary.
Yeah. And like Vanessa's also proud and loud in her own ways too. And I just think you don't get to compartmentalize like how we as founders show up, you know?
I feel like that's honestly so healing for me to hear too, because I think a lot of where this podcast started from was I got out of a part of my career where I felt a lot of pressure to be like a nonprofit darling. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the nature of working in nonprofits of like, I have to be fundable and not fundable, like not investable, fundable as in like someone's giving me no strings attached money.
Yeah.
And so I need to be this like very polished darling, like watch what I say, how I dress, like what I talk about. And I think like, part of Tigress is like trying to figure out who I am. Yeah. Honestly, after kind of growing up in this like public toxic girl boss way.
Totally.
And I think that's been, you know, also really healing for me. I'd be curious to know like more specific ways of like how coming into this, honestly, like this version, I don't want to even say if version's the right word, but like this deeper level of yourself, how that has like specifically affected your career, right?
Yeah.
Whether it be in creativity in being bold and asking for what you want in your work.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. They feel so tied. Like I can't even divorce them. I think it's given me greater empathy and ability to listen, which I think as a leader has been transformative for me.
Yeah.
It's definitely also like unlocked creativity. Like absolutely, like a huge part of my job is literally creating scenes and scenes. I'm not only am I just thinking about the things that I have to do, right? I'm also like layering on top, okay, like what sort of tone do I want to take? Do they respond well to hell and brimstone? Or do they respond well to like softness and like coyness? You know, oftentimes I'm doming folks in spaces that are not my home. So it's like, okay, there's a class I did it's called like Mistress MacGyver, where you like learn how to, all right, like if I'm in this room, what can I use to like restrain someone or like initiate fear or initiate intimidation. Like, all right, these cords, like what can I do with these cords? Or like, oh, this light's interesting. Can I use it to shine it on them and make them feel naked? And like, it's that sort of like on your feet thinking has really kind of sharpened my skills as a creative. And that's what it's the biggest challenge with domination. Sometimes it becomes really easy to like play a role.
Yeah.
Like, oh fuck, I gotta like do this thing and act this way and sound this way. And for me, it's like, how do I sit in my skin as Kim Pham and like use all that I have around me to still be mommy, but just in different iterations. And like that has absolutely contributed to the work that I do with Omsom on content, on brand and creative.
Yeah.
Like it's all the same thing. It all comes from the same place.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm already a huge fan of Omsom, but I feel like talking to you and like hearing kind of the magic of how you think about it gives me a deeper appreciation for it. Of like, oh, this is why like the boldness and the excitement.
Yeah.
So when we first met, like maybe last year, you were not as public on social media about being a dom.
Yeah.
Like this was not something you were on TikTok or Instagram about talking about. I remember stalking you on Instagram being like, oh my gosh, I love her brand, but this was not a public thing. So when was the kind of public emergence of Kim as mommy and like what spurred that?
There wasn't like a moment, but honestly, like you were a huge part of it. Like you live and breathe. And like, I'm so like every time I open TikTok or Instagram, I'm like, holy shit, like you just pushed me to keep showing all of me. And I think it was honestly the culmination of like seeing other badass women of color like own their shit.
Yeah.
And then also honestly, it was like DMs. Like whenever I used to post occasionally on like Instagram story about like going to BDSM events or like learning Shibari ties and all of that. And then my DMs would literally be like Asian women being like, oh my God, I've been exploring with my partner. And I'm like, this is so much more than I thought. I was like a weirdo. Like I've always been a weirdo, but like, I just thought that, oh, maybe a very small percentage likes this sort of stuff. And then it just made me realize, like, when I started getting all these DMs, like, wow, actually, this is a black box. BDSM is a black box. For most people who don't, like, aren't super involved in the sex work community or aren't actively, like, putting their hand up and going to munches and BDSM events, like, the only exposure is, like, 50 Shades of Grey and porn. And yeah. I was like, I cannot have all these young people going around with only these two things as their modes of, like, inspiration. Like there's so much more to BDSM that is joyful and healing that isn't just porn and 50 Shades. And so yeah. I was like, fuck it. I have a bit of martyr energy. I was like, fuck it. I'll take the L. I'll take the L publicly if it means that there are Asian women who can advocate for themselves. If there are DOMs who can understand like, oh, to be dominant doesn't just mean I have to put on latex and chains. I mean, I do like that shit, but like latex and chains to dominate. Like you can engage in BDSM in so many different ways that can be so joyful. And I wanted it to be less of a black box. And so that's why I was like, all right, I'm just going to do it like full send. Here we go. And then, then TikTok kind of started taking off for me. And that's when I realized, again, people need this information. So in an accessible way, I think a lot of the information is like either kind of locked away in sex work communities, fair enough, or it's like mainstream, super muddled, incredibly messy, and frankly, misinformed a lot of it. There's so many misconceptions that are perpetuated by like pop culture. And I was like, okay, there's got to be like a middle ground of someone who has had the immense privilege and platform that I do have, but also has like cut her teeth and like honestly earned my stripes in doing this.
Yeah.
That I can, I don't know, I feel like there's no one, I have to do it. There's no other way.
What do you think the biggest piece of misinformation is about BDSM?
I literally have a TikTok series on this and it's three parts now because there's so many misconceptions. The biggest one is you must love hurting people. It is the most reductive way of viewing DS. It's the most reductive way of viewing power and control, that it's about hurt. And I'm like, I'm so full of love for humans, which is why I dominate them.
Yeah.
Like I tell the story all the time. I've been a feminist my whole life. My whole life I've been like, patriarchy fucks women over.
Yeah.
Fuck patriarchy. It was not until I became a dom that I was like, oh my God, the patriarchy also fucks men over. And I started to see that in a real way because I would have male identifying submissives come to me and be like, I am given zero room for feminine expression in my life. My whole life, I've had to be the tallest, the biggest dick, the strongest, the most, you know, financially stable. Da, 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 da. And by the patriarchy creating so much pressure and expectations for them, that kind of robbed them of space for softness, for weakness, for submission, which is seen as negative and bad. And I'm like, man, I see you so fully and I love you. Not like love, but you know, I love you and I want to create space for you to like access that. And that is why I dominate. Like, yes, sometimes it is through the occasional pain or impact play, but that's not the heart of it. The heart of it is creating space for someone to find something that brings them joy. That can be pain, but that's not the heart of it. And so people must like, I get it all the time. Like, you're just like a man hater. And I'm like, well, that's a separate conversation. But as it relates to BDSM and impact play in, you know, it's actually so full of love and joy.
It sounds like so much trust and like the negotiation piece. Like I think the more I learn about it from you and also from other reading is just like, it's like the ultimate form of if every societal, you know, misconception was not watching us and we were not judged, what would this look like?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So where can people find you and follow you?
Yes, you can find me at Kim of the Internet on Instagram and TikTok and then just kimfam.org. You want to check out my site.
Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, boo. This was so fun.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.